time for Vanessa and Gallant.
That sounds good. I'll have that.
Featuring Vanessa Richardson.
This is not a common opinion. This is not a popular opinion.
And Paul Gallant.
I think for the average person that sees me, they don't know that I'm a cat dad.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, happy Tuesday, y'all. The Astros made some moves. Yes, indeed, they did yesterday. The Astros adding Trey Mancini, Christian Vasquez. Jose Siri is gone as part of that trade deadline approaches. I'm Vanessa Richardson. That's Paul Gallant. Sean Mapes behind the glass, as always, and we hope everybody's having a good day. This was a crazy day last night.
Yeah, they also traded Jake Odorizzi to Atlanta for a lefty reliever.
Right?
Right.
And, as of this morning.
You also got a minor league pitcher in that trade to Jaden Murray from Tampa Bay. First reaction to it, Vanessa, you are better. And you didn't have to give up a whole lot that's going to affect you long-term to get better. How much better, I think, remains to be seen, but it's pretty exciting to get a guy in Trey Mancini, who is beloved in Baltimore, and a guy in Christian Vasquez, who is clearly an upgrade at the plate from Martin Maldonado.
Very solid. Trey Mancini has a great bat. They've already done some, you know, people on Twitter, Astros fans, baseball folks have already done some evaluation of how much further his balls that he hits will be in Minute Maid Park than Camden Yards.
Because they moved in left field 26 feet for some reason.
Well, he said he's really excited about that. I think Astros fans now, I like that you brought up how much better, because one of the questions people brought up that I think is a legitimate one is, okay, well, where's Michael Brantley? We need an update on that. Where are we at with that as far as the roster as a whole? But it's definitely an exciting addition. And like you said, we were sitting here talking about, all right, what's the most you would give up for one of these guys that can really make a difference? Love you, Jose Siri. But as part of a three-team deal, not too bad. And then, like you said, they were able to get some love for Jake Odorizzi as well.
They did trade Chase McDermott, who supposedly is good. Who knows, though? Minor leaguers, you never know. It's basically like 5 years later, you might be saying, oh, crap, we had that guy, and we traded him for a rental. But as far as Mancini goes, Mancini, right?
I keep butchering it. It is Trey Mancini, yes.
Okay, so as far as Mancini goes, my buddy covered him in Baltimore and gave me a scouting report. And he said, when he's bad, he is really, really bad. When he is good, he's totally locked in. He's extremely streaky. And his fly balls in Minute Maid Park, as you mentioned, because of the left field, should potentially go a little bit further, given the fact that the Crawford boxes exist. He had been in an 0-for-26 slump not too long ago. He was just able to get out of it. He is a decent first baseman. But I think more than anything, my friend said, like, this guy is the most stand-up of stand-up dudes. Just a wonderful person.
Well, he did go through cancer.
Right. And on top of that, was really close friends with this Mariners super fan who used to call into Baltimore Sports Talk Radio all the time, named Mo Gaba. He was really close with the guy. The poor kid passed away. But this guy's, I think, going to be extremely well liked, and I hope that he delivers. I think that given that New York also made some moves and brought in a couple of guys that have historically been pretty good against the Houston Astros, Frankie Montes, who's 8-5 and 13 starts against Houston, and Lou Trevino, who's not having a very good year, but is pretty good against Houston historically. You got to wonder, was this enough in the arms race to give you the best possible chance of beating a New York team in a possible playoff series?
I think it was Jeff Passan that said it best on the preview into, you know, Baseball Tonight, where he talked about the Astros made a lot of moves, the Yankees made a lot of moves. So both of the, you know, best teams in baseball, for all intents and purposes, made a lot of moves. And they may not be done yet. James Click is in win now mode. Here's what Click said about the goal of this trade deadline.
You ready? Yeah. James, your thoughts about the two trades you made?
There are two guys who we're really excited about bringing into the organization, and we think that they can help out the team this year. Our focus, obviously, is try to put ourselves in as best a position as we can to compete for a World Series this year. And these are two guys that we think can help us get there.
So that was obviously before the Odorizzi trade was final, which is why you said, you know, excited about the addition of those two guys.
I am interested by what role both of those players will have, because the Astros are in a very strange spot. The outfield depth, you lose a bit of it with Jose Siri, not acting like Jose Siri is somebody that you want out there every single day, but also with Michael Brantley injured, as you mentioned, where do you put Mancini, is he going to just go into first every single day? Does that mean Yuli becomes a defensive replacement? Is Mancini someone that you use in the outfield sort of the same way that you use Jordan Alvarez occasionally in the outfield too? And I would say specifically left field. I'm not putting him anywhere else. And I'm also, you know, trying to figure out how often are we going to see Christian Vasquez. And Dusty Baker, when he weighed in on the two newest acquisitions, did have something interesting to say about what he sees Vasquez's roles. Here's Dusty Baker talking about that.
You guys make the move today for Trey Mancini. What are your impressions of him? What are your initial thoughts about his role?
Well, I don't really know him, but I've followed him and talked to him a couple times in the past. You know, we both are cancer survivors, and he's a heck of a guy on the stand, a heck of a guy on the team. Not really sure. You know, we're going to try to get him in when we, you know, when I think it's the best, you know, for him and for us.
You get another veteran catcher, Christian Vasquez, a lot of experience in the postseason. How do you envision maybe splitting time between he and Martin?
Well, I haven't really, you know, figured that out yet. I mean, Martin's like, you know, directing our team. I mean, directing our pitching staff. So I'm using both of them. I got two heck of a catchers now, two experienced guys. You know, he can pinch run for Molly. He can pinch hit for Molly on days that he plays, and I just let him play.
A little interesting. No, what he was saying about Christian Vasquez, and I say from this perspective, look, Dusty has to figure out who the guy is, and let's be honest, it's not like Dusty Baker is keeping track of all of baseball, as he proved at the All-Star game with Shane McClanahan. Is Vasquez going to be the guy that's in the lineup more often than not? I feel like he should be. I know that there's a lot of love for Machete here, and that also, interestingly enough, Maldonado and Vasquez are supposedly friends, but I am a big believer that you want the better hitting catcher out there as much as possible. And I get it. Maldonado calls a great game. But I want to have as many bats in that lineup as I possibly can have. And I was listening to Jake Arrieta on the Pardon My Take podcast yesterday talking about how, like, all these catchers are big league catchers. Yeah, some maybe are better at calling a game than others. But, you know, when you actually have a bat in Christian Vasquez who's hitting, you know, close to 300 as a catcher, you got to give that guy as many opportunities as you possibly can. And hearing it from Dusty Baker right there, at least his first reaction is, oh, yeah, pinch runner. Oh, yeah, he'll hit occasionally for Maldonado. Oh, Maldonado's our guy. I don't know. I don't know if they should be so married to the idea of only Maldonado or mostly Maldonado.
They didn't have a lot of time to react to it because this trade did take place, of course, right before the Red Sox took on the Astros at Minute Maid Park. Here's Christian Vasquez, who was shipped off from this interview by Red Sox PR because he was literally just traded.
A lot of reports out there that you might be going across the way. Have you heard anything yet?
I think so, yeah.
How do you feel about being traded to the Astros, Christian?
It's a business.
And then he got taken away like he was the president of the United States.
I didn't understand why they couldn't let him finish the interview. I understand that there's timing and all of that, but it was cold. It's a business.
He was clearly blindsided by it. I don't know. I think if I were the Red Sox, I would probably want Vasquez to have a little bit of time to collect his thoughts. And I think if I'm the Astros too, because ultimately he looks like he doesn't want to be there, where he's probably just stunned that he had been traded to begin with, even though his name had been circulating in rumors. We mentioned yesterday that this was a name that the Astros were supposedly pursuing if they couldn't get Wilson Contreras from Chicago, and they were asking for a lot for Contreras. So I don't want to read too much into that interview other than it was just awkward as hell.
It was really awkward, and we saw this. You know what it reminded me of? I immediately thought of when the Mariners trade before they played Seattle that involved Graveman.
Oh, yeah, when they were
Joe
crying
Smith
over Kendall Graveman, yeah.
I mean, it was in there. It was really emotional.
Covering the other side of that, Vanessa, was something else.
Yeah.
Everyone in Seattle
the
wanted to riot.
The announcers were literally just
like, he's a
sitting
reliever.
There before the game and saying, like, okay, so what are they going to do? Are they going to go put on other jerseys? Are they going to? And that's exactly what they do. They go behind the tunnel, they give him a jersey, and they don't take the plane ride home with their old team.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a whole thing that, look, I never say like, oh, I feel sorry for these guys. They make a lot of money, blah, blah, blah. Like, that's fine. It is a business, but you have to, the human emotion of shock, I think, is something we can all empathize with.
To be fair, though, if you're going to be traded anywhere, don't you want to be traded to the team you're literally playing right now?
True.
Because that does just cut out one plane ride.
And they're really good.
Yes.
You know,
that
it's
too.
Not like any that of too. These guys got traded to a team that's that's bad, which I think makes Mancini even more likable because he still gave all the love to Baltimore, knowing he's going to a team that could go to the World Series.
Let's pause for a moment on that, and because I look, it's great that we cover the Houston Astros. We get to watch the Houston Astros on a daily basis, right? But the trade deadline bums me out. The Orioles are right in the thick of a playoff race, and they traded away a fan favorite. I mean, it just goes to show you that this time of year, yes, like the rich get richer and stuff, and they essentially trade nothing for it. But imagine being an Orioles fan. You're closer to the playoffs than you've been in years, and all of a sudden you trade away one of your best players because, well, maybe 3 years down the road, some of these rando players are actually going to help us out. Like, that disgusts me. I hate it. These cheap-ass owners do this all the time, and baseball has so many cheap owners, and they all hide. They're all anonymous. It pisses me off, honestly. I'm glad that the Astros were able to take advantage of it. I like being the robber barons in this situation. It's nice to be a Death Star to hold a team hostage and say, hey, here's Jose Siri. Give us your best player. But at the same time, it just sucks for the rest of baseball.
It does. It does. But if you're Trey Mancini, aren't you happy that you're going to a team that has results? For the fan base, though, yeah, it is
definitely
a mega bummer.
You know, especially because you're in the midst of this fun year. You're going to free agency after the season anyway. Don't you kind of want to finish out the season with this team that you've played for your whole for a while? I mean, I don't know. I feel for Mancini in that way. I feel for Orioles fans, but I will gladly take this guy. You need all the bats that you can get.
That's
right
why
now.
You have to have GMs that have no emotions and
yeah, that's right.
That have
I couldn't do
because
it.
They cannot feel any of what you're feeling right now. Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we know what the biggest story in the sports world was yesterday and continues to be today.
Oh, great.
Reaction, updates, statements, all of the Deshaun Watson things coming up next. But first, let me tell you about my friends at Circa. If you have a trip to Vegas planned, okay, which I think a lot of us might because the Texans play the Raiders, the biggest pro football contest in Vegas is back. $12 million in guarantee prizes. You have two ways to win and no rake. The Circa Sports Millions with quarterly payouts and 100% paybacks. What that is, you make five NFL pick against the spread each week. You get 1 point for each correct selection and half a point for a push. $1 million for the first prize winner, over 3.5 million cash prizes, okay? And then there's Circus Survivors, and y'all know how Survivor Pool works, right? So you choose a different winning team each week straight up without the spread. Once a team is chosen, you, of course, cannot use them again. Only one winner in that contest. Now, you have to enter in person. So, again, if you have a trip to Vegas planned, it's easy. You go to the Circa Casino and Resort while you're there. You enter this contest, and then from there you can play anywhere. Enter in Vegas, play from anywhere. It's Circa, C-I-R-C-A, sports.com for details.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, the NFL has less than 48 hours to appeal the decision and the recommendation made by the Honorable Sue L. Robinson, who, as you have heard by now, unless you live under a rock, recommended a 6-game suspension from the NFL for Deshaun Watson. Now, we're going to get into the statements in a second. I want to start with, I don't know if you guys were able to read the full document. I actually did. It wasn't as nauseating as I thought it was as far as the length. But there are a couple of things that stood out to me. The first one, and this was actually brought up by Don Venata Jr. of ESPN. There's a footnote where she mentions the NFL's unequal treatment of owners, quote, who have been accused of similar or worse, but faced zero consequences compared to players, and that clearly swayed the judge. That really stood out to me. And then another thing that stood out to me, it was a nugget by Jeff Darlington. Appeals must be based on the evidentiary record within Robinson's findings. And there's enough to where you would think when you read this that the NFL would be able to find evidence to possibly appeal. So what was your reaction when you guys read the document, when you read the conclusions, kind of the bullet points, what stood out to you?
Robinson doesn't believe him at all. Doesn't believe Deshaun Watson. Like, thought he was full of it. And I think it's pretty interesting that she wrote that in a couple of spots. She felt that Watson didn't tell the truth when testifying, specifically when it came to erections during massages or inadvertently touching therapists with his penis. So,
and I mean, he's reading that verbatim, by the way. Paul's like not trying to be funny. That's like the actual wording.
Let's just start. I mean, 6-game suspension for someone you think is full of poop. Like you think he's completely full of crap. I am surprised by that. And she said, look, based on the accounts of the accusers, these were all substantially corroborated, in her words, by contemporaneous, nice word, text messages and discussions with third parties after their interactions with Mr. Watson. And a lot of them were saying he was getting erections when he was being massaged by them. So that they only gave a 6-game suspension when they clearly didn't believe him. He's lucky. I mean, he is lucky as hell that there's no way that evidence could have been introduced into this.
It almost made me feel like she only gave him 6 games because owners have been punished less and because other people have been punished less. Sean, were you able to read it? What stood out to you?
I was not able to read it, but I did see the, you know, the clips that get tweeted out by all the reporters that did read it and simplified it for little old me. But yeah, that is the most striking part, is that at every turn she is like, yep, Deshaun Watson, guilty, kind of a scumbag, intentionally, you know, try to rub his penis on people. But since Daniel Snyder and Robert Kraft and Jerry Jones don't get any punishment,
right?
Only 6 games.
There's a lot of gray areas here because I actually understand what she means by that. Like, why are you going to punish a player more than you've punished any owner? And she almost put it to the NFL and the NFL owners where they need to be consistent. But still, 6 games seems light if she really thinks he did all of these things.
But here's the other thing about this, and Mike Florio brought this up. And look, I trust Florio. Florio does speculate a lot and throws out some hot takes from time to time. But the guy does have a law background and read this thing through. And he took away from this that the NFL has been handed by Sue Robinson a means to actually suspend Deshaun Watson further. Because, as I said a little bit before, she clearly finds Watson to be full of it. She also, of course, brought up that this is about as bad as it gets when it comes to nonviolent incidents that the NFL...
Such a nasty word.
...has dealt with. And I feel like now, if the NFL does want to make this messier, they have the means to do it. But the real question is, are they going to do it? Is Roger Goodell going to want this to drag out? Because, yes, the Players Association says they're not going to appeal right now. If Goodell all of a sudden decides, you know what, we're going to give a longer suspension, then the NFL Players Association is going to appeal. And who knows how long this will take?
Well, Deshaun Watson's camp said they may sue.
Right.
I mean, so that could be a very, very long process.
By the way, while we're on Deshaun Watson's camp, imagine, and this was from Josina, imagine being pissed off.
We need a drop.
With a 6-game suspension.
Yeah. They think he should have gotten nothing.
They think he should have gotten nothing. Okay. I mean, good for you guys. Good for you. What's that song, Olivia Rodrigo?
That is the song by Olivia
There you go.
Rodrigo.
How about but, that?
That,
a little
that
pop
is
culture.
The craziest part of the whole Deshaun Watson defense is that for the longest, it's like, did nothing wrong. Just keep it moving, keep it. And in so many ways, it makes him look so much worse that he's like, I didn't think I should get suspended at all.
100%.
Like, you are settling these cases. Like, if it's just so.
Issue a little bit of a mea culpa, right?
Yes. Like, somehow, I guess, he's been accused of, like, what, over 25 women of sexual misconduct. So it's really impossible for him to look even worse than that. Like, the handling of that doesn't really matter when what you're doing is, or accused of doing, is already so bad. But come on, Watson can't. 0 games?
Yeah. I mean, ridiculous.
Well, the whole side of it. I mean, the Browns statement. Did you see the Haslam statement? The Haslams put out a statement. It was both from Dee and Jimmy. Dee is Jimmy's wife. Throughout this process, Deshaun and his representatives have abided by the newly created and agreed-upon process, blah, blah, blah. We respect Judge Robinson's decision and at the same time empathize and understand that there have been many individuals triggered throughout this process. We know Deshaun is remorseful. Pause. Sue Robinson went out of her way in her write-up to say, Watson showed, like, no remorse.
Well, not only that, he hasn't said that right. He's actually said that he doesn't think he did anything wrong.
Exactly. And here the Browns are speaking for him because they don't even believe him. And they traded for him because they're full of it. Like everybody in this stupid-ass league. Unbelievable.
They did have media availability yesterday. And Kevin Stefanski went straight from the practice field to the media podium. So he didn't, quote-unquote, have a chance to read the report. But here's what Kevin Stefanski said.
As you know, all along, I've said and tried to be consistent that I'm going to respect this process. And as you saw today, this process will continue with today's ruling. This is a jointly agreed upon process from the NFLPA and the NFL. This was collectively bargained. And so I'm going to respect Judge Robinson and her opinion right now until more information becomes available to me.
It's a big nothing burger, right?
It's bogus that the coaches get forced to answer these questions, too. Yeah. I mean, the Haslams sold their soul for this, and then they put out this statement where they're saying, yeah, Deshaun Watson's sorry for the things that he says he's never done. And on top of that, too, like, where's Andrew Berry to talk about this? He's the one that pulled the trigger on the trade.
It should not be on Kevin Stefanski.
No, not at all.
I always say we should hear more from owners. These are the people making the decisions. We do have a caller that I want to get to. Donald is on the line and would like to talk about Deshaun Watson. Donald, thanks for calling Vanessa and Gallant. What are your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts is, why is nobody speaking about the grand jury not giving him? You don't think the judge took that in consideration when she made her decision? Did she write anything in there about that?
What do you mean? What, the grand jury and the lack of indictments?
Right.
So you're saying that... What are you getting at?
It should mean something to everybody.
You're saying that it should mean that he didn't do these things. Hello?
Do what?
You're saying that it means that he didn't do these things? Okay.
So you have no argument.
Here's the long and the short of it. This was not about any criminal charges. This was not about anything criminal. This is called conduct detrimental to the league. It actually, FYI to everybody listening, has nothing to do with criminality. That is completely separate. This is about conduct. That's the exact wording. Conduct detrimental to the league. It can range in anything from situations involving guns to being reckless about COVID to DUIs, a myriad of different things. It has nothing to do with the actual criminal process. I am so tired. Regardless of how you feel about Deshaun Watson, understand reading comprehension. We love you, Donald, but it has nothing to do with criminal.
Ezekiel Elliott was accused by, I think, of one woman of sexual misconduct and had the charges dropped. It was also a civil case.
Thank you.
He also got 6 games.
Yep, because it was conduct detrimental to the league.
It has nothing to do with the justice process. This isn't the judicial process.
No.
26. There were 26, Donald. Good God. Good God. Like, oh, he wasn't indicted by the grand jury. What evidence did they have to present? There's no video evidence of Deshaun Watson, like, waving his wang around.
Right.
There isn't that there. If there was, guess what? The guy would be donezo. Guess what? That isn't available as evidence for court. So I'm sorry. I lose patience with this. I was losing patience when I read that Haslam statement. It is frustrating that Sue Robinson can clearly see that Watson is full of it and that it's just 6 games. Like that was my big takeaway from reading all of
just
that.
Just at least be correct in your takes and be correct in how you feel and about the process, because I've seen that so many times and people just don't understand the way that the NFL works. The NFL, guys, not the court system, FYI. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we will have NFL games that will be played this fall. 37 days to be exact, our NFL segment coming up next.
ESPN.
97.5.
We're ready for some football, baby.
The countdown to the NFL season continues with Vanessa and Gallant.
All right, 37 days until the NFL regular season kicks off. Pauly G, what is your number 37 jersey?
We got Sean Alexander, who's probably the best player to ever wear that number. For those who don't remember, Sean Alexander was part of the Seahawks mid-2000s Super Bowl team. And a man who, I believe, rushed for 2,000 yards at least once, 2005, the MVP of the NFL. Also, shout out to safeties Rodney Harrison, who harassed your boy Peyton Manning in the playoffs with 2 interceptions in that AFC Championship game. One of the greatest games I've ever watched live. Carnell Lake as well, another great safety for the Pittsburgh Steelers for the longest time. The Jacksonville Jaguars as well.
There you go. Hey, we have a call. Eric is calling to talk about the latest NFL news, all things involving Deshaun Watson. Eric, you're on Vanessa and Gallant. What's up, man?
Hey, how y'all doing today?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm not gonna lie. I'm a little perturbed, a little annoyed because, well, first off, I know I'm about to catch a lot of smoke for this, so I'll make this quick. I, as a black man, am tired of seeing these black dudes on Twitter, hearing these black dudes get on the radio and talk about, well, Deshaun Watson was no Bill, you know, so we just not going to follow the justice system. Why does he need to be punished and blah, blah, blah? And it's like, come on, dog. Learn something for a second, because let's be real. Any job, you can work for Amazon. You can work for Burger King. Who cares? They have a code of conduct. They have a code of ethics.
Yeah.
If you make them look bad, if you break that, then you are subject to suspension, to fines, to being fired. This dude did what he did. Whatever. He got no bills. That has nothing to do with the fact that he still broke rules within the NFL. So all these dudes out here talking about, all these black dudes out here talking about, well, he shouldn't get any suspension, this and that. Bro, they need to stop with that, because it's bad enough that Deshaun Watson has set us back as black men 10 years, and now every time one of these dudes open their mouth on Twitter, social media, or on the radio, they're setting us back even more. Like, they just need to stop with that, bro. Just need to stop with it.
I don't think you're going to catch any arguments.
I hang up and
listen.
Thank you, guys.
You're not going to have any flack for me and I. We're both sitting here nodding our heads.
That has been one of the more frustrating dynamics of this. It does seem to be turning into something that's about race, and it's not. I mean, Watson is, in his own conversation, we're talking about 26 incidents, and if you were not extremely talented at your job, bringing in millions to a company, they are not going to look the other way on you. You will be clipped so fast, even if you are found innocent of all of them. Because guess what? Your name's going to be out there in the public eye, and it is a representation of the company that you work for. That is why the suspension is taking place. I think he is extremely lucky that he has not been charged criminally. I get it. He was not indicted by a grand jury, multiple grand juries. But go back and take a look at how those grand juries came to be.
Sure.
In terms of what they were presented. They had people that they were not even seeing in front of them. It's because there was not a lot of evidence that they could actually use to try him in a criminal case. And if you are an attorney general, or if you are a district attorney, or if you are anybody, are you going to try and make a case where you have no chance of winning in prosecution? No, you're not going to do that.
It's a great point. And like I said, I don't think he's going to catch any flack from us. I think it's very frustrating how much race has been brought into this. I do understand there may be elements of that, but to his point, you work somewhere, you got to abide by the ethics. All right, Texans training camp, we were in the midst of it. Paul was out there this morning. How was it?
Okay, I don't want to freak anybody out because it's practice.
But you got some observations.
Yeah, Derek Stingley Jr. has been very disappointing to this point. And look, he's a rookie. He's coming off of an injury. There are lots of factors that you can throw out there. And look, it's not a game, it's practice. We're talking about practice. But multiple incidents today where I saw Stingley in one-on-one coverage against Chris Conley. Conley had a step on him deep on a pass that Davis Mills underthrew. There was another play where on a comeback route, Conley shook Stingley, and at least one coach was definitely, let's just say, giving words of not affirmation after that moment
no
in time.
No poor memories.
Right.
Davis Mills talked a little bit about the chemistry he sees with himself and Nico Collins and the potential that he thinks is there.
Nico's put in a ton of work all last year and through this offseason. I mean, it shows what he's been doing out here at practice. I think we've definitely developed chemistry, and I mean, he's going to be dangerous when we're on the same page and how we are on the same page. I don't think there's many people out there who can stop him.
I think a lot of people are hoping that chemistry amps up. We know there's Brandon Cooks. We know that there could be other weapons. But it would be cool to see a draft pick by Nick Caserio really pan out to be something good.
Cooks is the guy that you challenge, that you trust absolutely out there. But I do think it has been interesting to note that there have been two wide receivers that have been going off with the quarterbacks during some of their just like routine throwing the ball into, you know, like specific windows and the red zone drills. It's been Brandon Cooks, who you, of course, completely trust. And it has also been Nico Collins. So those two seem to be right now the number one and number two guys as far as the guys who are going to be, carrying this passing attack perhaps on their shoulders or in their hands.
And I should mention your observation on Stingley Jr. you have made before. So you've been consistent on
that. A couple of days in a row.
Let's hope he improves. Could be just a rookie thing, but definitely worth noting.
It could be just a practice thing, too.
Yeah, it sounds like Paul's calling him a bust.
Sounds like...
I'm not doing that.
Sounds like Paul is saying Casario failed. No. All right, let's go around the AFC South. So the Jags announced that Trevor Lawrence will not play Thursday versus the Raiders in the Hall of Fame game.
Damn it. I mean, what's... Damn it. I want to watch a game that's actually entertaining, right?
That was my reaction. I saw my girl Mia O'Brien tweet this out, and I was very sad. CJ Beathard, who's coming off a groin injury, won't play either. So
beat hard.
Really not worth watching at all, but yes, a bummer.
My co-host in Seattle and I used to call him beat hard. We know we were pronouncing it incorrectly, but we're immature children.
But that is just how it goes.
Also, thank you, Jaguars, for not even giving us the opportunity to be excited about the Hall of Fame game.
Right.
Which I think the Hall of Fame game is by far the most overrated
it's
sports
terrible.
Event.
Yeah, it's so bad.
It's sucks. Dumb, but you do get a little taste of football ahead of the preseason.
How quickly does the fix of football wear off? That's the real question.
The second CJ
watching
Beathard
the
walks
twos
in.
And threes.
Can you make it through the first quarter without saying, oh, damn it? Switching back to anything else.
Now Jake Luton's actually starting instead of playing only 80% of the game.
Should be fun. I understand not wanting to risk injury, but come on. Texans news. Former Colts and Titans wide receiver Chester Rogers visited the Texans last night. It does sound like a
Chester
president.
Chester A. Arthur.
This would be his third AFC South team. Can he get to four? That's the question.
James Garfield also working out for the Houston Texans along with Howard Taft.
And going to provide some interior presence.
They needed Herbert Hoover in as well.
There were a couple of guys that did three out of four AFC South teams. Like, I know Matt Overton, a long snapper, and I know this because I was watching the Indianapolis media talk about this last night. And did Andre Johnson hit
played
three?
For the Colts and Titans.
That's right. That's right. And well, obviously, yeah. So he hit three out of four as well.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe a little AFC South tour.
I guess interesting that they're looking for more depth at wide receiver and specifically veteran depth. I don't know if that's, you know, an indictment on anyone after Collins and Brandon Cooks. That is interesting that they're going after a veteran. They do have a lot of young bodies in there at wide receiver this camp.
We're going to hear from Titus Howard tomorrow. He's speaking at the podium currently. He did, per Texans reporter Drew Doherty, say he's happy to be back at right tackle. He's looking forward to continuing to grow and improve at the spot where he's most comfortable. I'm just glad, hopefully, he's not going to get shifted around anymore. I understand they were trying different
things. Yeah, I hate that.
But... the whole, I think Bill O'Brien, somebody brought this up on Twitter, ruined the word versatility.
Oh, my God.
Because he would always say it ad nauseum. I covered him less than you, so I can't even imagine how many times you heard that word.
You know,
I don't want versatility anymore. I want somebody that's really, really good at one position.
Xavier Suofilo, I felt like, was screwed from the beginning when they brought him in. He was essentially a first rounder in 2014. He had to come in late because the Pac-12 has stupid graduation rules. But when he came and he joined the Texans, they were moving him all over the place. They were trying him at center. They were trying him at guard. And it always felt like he was trying to just figure out how to be a pro. So, yes, put a guy at one position. If you switch sides of the ball that they're on, especially on the offensive line, ask any veteran offensive lineman. They'll tell you it's like doing something with your non-dominant hand.
All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we got some big baseball news brewing. Where is Soto heading? All of the latest from the biggest baseball writers. That's coming up next.
ESPN.
97.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Gallant. On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
We have all of the baseball news that seems to be becoming official. This is per John Morosi literally 2 minutes ago. Padres and Nationals have agreed in principle on a Juan Soto trade with Josh Bell also going to San Diego. So Juan Soto and Josh Bell both going to San Diego. We thought Josh Bell, Irving native, as you pointed out, has family here, grew up in Dallas, would possibly be somebody that could join the Astros and that it would make sense. It doesn't appear like that would be the case. Per Heyman, all of the big dogs are saying that that's going to happen.
Give the Padres credit.
They're going for it.
They aren't pores. I mean, most teams actually care about venturing into that luxury tax danger zone. And I would imagine, at least at first observation, that if the Nationals were to bring in Juan Soto, that they are going to want to extend him long term. I'm assuming you're going to have to give up a lot for him, and you're going to want to give him the kind of contract that he's getting, which is pretty crazy, seeing as you gave both Manny Machado and Fernando Tatis pretty massive deals to continue to play for the Padres. It's just weird to think of San Diego as the team that's shelling out the big bucks. Like, this used to be New York in the early 2000s. The Yankees didn't give a you-know-what. Now the Padres don't give a you-know-what. And if they're able to get Josh Bell there, too, I don't know how much this changes their chances of winning. I just know that they have a lot of big names, and I'll give them credit for being aggressive. It doesn't always work out, though. The splashy moves, you know, yes, it's worked for the Astros before with Justin Verlander at the trade deadline, but this is an interesting one. Whatever the case, I would not want to be in the National League going up against the Padres if they have Soto aboard, too.
My favorite word is blockbuster. Excuse me, blockbuster, because it's always used on days like this. And that's the word that we keep seeing being used. Now, we don't exactly know what everything in return is. John
right.
Morosi, so it's not official, but Morosi, I think, knows this stuff. He said the Nats are set to receive C.J. Abrams, Robert Hassel III, James Wood, Harlan Susanna for Juan Soto, and Josh Bell. So
noted right-wing pundit and actor.
Also, Harlan Woods sounds like another president that should be playing.
Yeah.
Presidential sports names is a segment that we need to do.
Like a fictional president, though, that would be on 24 and maybe die. Because he was like...
picks up a phone and is like, I don't negotiate with terrorists.
Or yeah, that. Or Jack Bauer kills him because he's like secretly betraying the American people.
KGB asset, Harlan, whatever his last name.
Chester Rogers is the most presidential sports name we've heard, by the way. That was a good call by Paul. All right. Juan Soto is a Padre done deal, says John Heyman. I haven't seen anything from Passan yet. Guys, how does this shake up, you think, the way that the standings, the
I'm
rest
glad
of
you
the
said
season?
That. We can't believe John Heyman. He blocked me on Twitter.
Well, it's funny. In our group chat, every time John Heyman says something,
like,
I have to make sure I screenshot it or else
I can't
Paul
see it.
Can't see it.
Nope.
How does this shake up potentially the way that the standings go, the playoff picture? Do you think this helps the Padres monumentally, or are we just spoiled here in Houston? Because every time Houston makes a big move, it seems to work out.
I think that you do have a really good track record here, and that even when you see these moves outside, you shouldn't get too tempted to try to move things like this. To their credit, just about every move that they have done has worked out. I mean, really, I'm trying to think of the last time that the Astros have biffed when it comes to moving on from a player. And honestly, it's probably J.D. Martinez, right? Who is also potentially on the trade block with the Boston Red Sox right now in the last year of his contract. Because Martinez was here with the Astros, and then all of a sudden he goes to, I think, Detroit and then Boston eventually. And he was really good with both of those teams. But, you know, that's a totally different general management group too. But yeah, I mean, they win the trades that they're in. I do want to say, though, and I'm going to say it a couple of times, I like what the Astros did. They incrementally improved, but this trade does not mean that they are all of a sudden going to win the American League Championship Series against the New York Yankees, which we think is going to happen. Because the biggest problem right now is the play of Jeremy Peña and the play of Kyle Tucker. And I saw a couple of tweets about this last night, Vanessa, and I was taking a look at the numbers. And what's pretty crazy to see is that over the course of the last month, Peña's OPS has dropped from 27. His average has dropped from 279 to 249. His OPS has dropped from 807 to 732. He had two strikeouts last night in big time moments. And Kyle Tucker, who was 0 for 4, his average has dropped from 262 to 240 over that same stretch. His OPS from 857 to 775. So, in a nutshell, both those guys are hitting horribly. And unless they are able to pull out of this slump, I don't know. I don't feel great. The Astros aren't scoring a ton of runs of late.
Hyperbole or not hyperbole, we talk a lot about hyperbole on the show. Jeff Passan tweeted, it's one of the biggest deals in baseball history. Do you feel that way?
Yeah. I mean, look, if you're getting both Juan Soto and Josh Bell.
I will say Jeff Passan only tweeted about Juan Soto, as did John Heyman. That gives me a little bit of pause, makes me think that maybe the Josh Bell part of it isn't official yet, but we don't know that. But either way, I mean, if Josh Bell is involved for sure, teaming up with Fernando Tatis Jr. and Manny Machado, says Jeff Passan.
Interesting side note, and I know this isn't baseball, but I just saw this pop up. This is from Tom Pelissero of the NFL Network, and it does relate to the Texans in a way because remember the Brian Flores lawsuit not too long ago. So the NFL, per Tom Pelissero, is docking the Dolphins 2 draft picks and suspending owner Stephen Ross as a result of the league's tampering allegation. So that means that they will lose a first-round pick in 2023 and a third-round selection. He may not be president at the Dolphins facility. He may not represent the club.
Oh, but it's only through October 17th.
It's a pretty substantial fine, though, for an owner.
The fine is big.
$500,000. Again, it's for an owner. But I would say it's interesting that this comes on the heels of the ruling by Sue Robinson that the NFL is not hard on owners. And then right afterwards, they're like, oh, yeah, well, we're gonna fine and suspend and take draft picks from the Dolphins.
We are the breaking news show, by the way. Mr. Ross, so says the NFL's official email from NFL Communications sent to my email, is suspended $1.5 million. Bruce Beal, the Dolphins vice chairman, is fined $500,000.
And I misspoke. I said tampering. This is from the Tom Brady, Sean Payton report, I believe, that Brian Flores probably brought to the table as part of his lawsuit against the league.
Also, you said October 17th is when he's allowed. That is the day after week 6 of the NFL schedule. So he got suspended 6 games as well.
It's a great point.
Accountability.
Okay, let's put our tinfoil hats on. I mean, 6 games, right? Why is 6 games now? Is it because it's half a season? That's not even half, is it?
It's less, or it's a little bit more than a third.
It's a little. Thank you, for, Professor Mapes, with the math. Don't ever talk to me about math.
I'm bad at it too.
What is it with 6 games?
Legitimately, this is. Is it we just punish like, owners too?
We think you do something wrong.
Yes,
and we need to prove that owners.
This is so transparent. My God, NFL, like hide it a little bit better, or at least suspend them a little bit longer, right? I mean, if you want to pander to the NFLPA, then like, I don't know.
I'm feeling a Paul rant. Are you feeling a Paul rant?
Also, not only they're dumping it on like 2 days after the Watson ruling, or a day after the Watson ruling, they're also dumping it like the second Juan Soto got traded.
Yeah,
that's a good news dump. Well, that's a good news dump.
I gotta say, suspensions for owners are the funniest thing, right?
I mean, because like, what are you doing?
It would be funny if they're like with the homework clause with Kyler Murray. You can't even watch their games. You got to go straight to bed after dinner, and you can't watch TV. You can't play video games either, Mr. Ross. No, you can't. No, no, no. We will be watching you. Like that would be a true suspension.
Does anybody ever also think this has vacation vibes? Like you're an owner, and you don't have to be at the facility. They're in Nantucket or Pebble Beach or Cancun.
The Hamptons.
Like, they're good.
Yeah. Or pull a Daniel Snyder. Go to France.
Go get on that yacht.
Get on that yacht that you tampered with Tom Brady on and go somewhere else.
The other thing about that, I mean, Daniel Snyder's technically not the owner of the Commanders anymore, too, right? It's like his wife, but no one actually believes it.
Oh, give me a break.
They have to do more. If you're gonna punish an owner, you should be fining them like a bleep ton of money, right? Like $10 million at least, or something,
or like
that.
A percentage of like that season's earnings.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then you can disperse it to the NFL Players Association or something like that, and that way you can pander to them, even though you're railroading them with the CBA that you have. This is funny.
You know what should really happen? Owners should just have to pay for their own stadiums. Like that's the ultimate.
Yeah, Bill Simmons.
That's the ultimate. It's like, you know what? We're not going to suspend you. We're not even going to fine you. But next time you want a shiny new toy and want the teachers and nurses and hardworking lawyers to pay for it of the city, you have to pay for it.
Hell
I bet
yeah.
An NFL owner would never mess up again.
Yeah, you're disqualified from asking the municipality in
Thank
which you,
you.
Play.
What is it?
Municipality.
It's
a fancy word for town or city.
Municipality.
Municipality.
Palmer Municipality. Go on.
Jay Mancini.
Up on Vanessa and Gallant.
Christian Vasquez.
Let's get to know the newest Houston Astros. We'll hear from some of them coming up next.
ESPN 97.5.